It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Athlete Susanna Scaroni has had a remarkable career. She's taken part in track and field in four Paralympic Games and earned six medals, including a gold at the Tokyo Paralympics in 2021. The next year, she won the women's wheelchair division of the Chicago Marathon. And in 2023, she won the same division in the Boston Marathon. Then, last month, she was back in Boston.
She looks good. She looks so strong. And what she's learned over all of that time, tactics, how to run a good race, how to run the perfect race for her. And that is what she did today.
In a field filled with major marathon champs, Susanna Scaroni is the best in Boston. Takes that title they all wanted here in 2025.
Susanna Scaroni, now a two-time Boston Marathon winner. Congratulations. Welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And that was fun to listen to that. It was a really, really great day.
Yeah, well, let's get into it and let's talk about it. Take me back to the moment you crossed the finish line. What is going through your mind?
Well, immediately at that point, it's like, whoa, actually did it, because I'm not the kind of person that likes to look behind me. And you never know, there have been shock finishes at the end of Boston. And so really at first, just to be like, oh my gosh, that actually happened. And I can't tell you how amazed and how happy I was. It was an incredible feel that day. So it was unexpected for me to be able to pull away from Catherine De Bruyner, who is just such an amazing and dominant athlete. So I was kind of in unbelief for most of that race once I knew there was a little bit of a gap from her. So coming across the line was really exciting. It was relieving. My coach and our assistants were right at the finish line too, and it was really, really special.
How is number two different than the first time you win the Boston Marathon?
I can say that it is a very similar experience for me. There was that same kind of like, I can't believe that just happened. It's just really, it's a joy. It's a bit of disbelief and relief as well. And I felt that way both times this happened.
What an amazing accomplishment. So how did you get into the world of track and field?
Yeah, I grew up in Eastern Washington State near Spokane, and I was injured at the age of 5 in a car wreck, which meant that I had a complete spinal cord injury, so started using a wheelchair full time. And I was really fortunate that in Spokane is an adaptive sports program for people of all ages, but including small kids. And my family and I learned about that program when I was 10. And so I started playing on the wheelchair basketball team. And I was just amazed that there was a sport where everybody else also used a wheelchair to play. And so I kind of fell in love immediately with that, the fact that I was playing sports like all of my classmates were. And that spring when they said wheelchair racing would begin, I had no idea what that was, but I just kind of begged my mom to see if I could also go drive another hour once a week to that kind of practice. And it, again, was something that I just loved. I had a great team with kids similar to my age. And I think it was just a perfect environment to enjoy it. I have a pretty decent, body type for the sport, and that I have long arms. And so it was something that I was able to kind of like progress in and excel. And I'm sure that helped my motivation. But I've loved it ever since.
Why? What was it? I mean, is there something about track, as opposed to basketball, that makes it more exciting for you or better suited to your personality or something like that?
Yeah, that's a really great point. I would say for me, what my favorite thing is not racing. It's actually training. And it's for that reason. I am really, really good at, I would say, like making small goals at every single workout of things that I can try and improve. I love watching feedbacks, like I love watching my speedometer, getting really in tune with my body to see how things feel, how things can become more efficient. And so it's such a great sport for me on an individual level to kind of try and better myself all the time. And I think that definitely helps support me in this sport. And the other thing is I'm okay spending a lot of time alone. And so if you want to do the marathon, it's pretty good to have that ability.
Yeah, lots of time to think out there. All right,
yeah.
So you mentioned growing up in the Pacific Northwest. How do you end up at the University of Illinois?
Yeah, great question. So for anyone who doesn't know, the University of Illinois is where we have our national wheelchair racing training site. And so because of that, and because of its long history of, you know, becoming the most accessible campus in the world, starting wheelchair basketball, and then starting wheelchair track, and providing all of these opportunities for people with disabilities who wanted to go to college or who wanted to do sports, a really strong program still exists here. And so I learned about the University of Illinois when I was growing up because I was in that kind of pipeline in that world. And I was really fortunate that the head coach here, Adam Bleakney, was willing to take me on. And so really grateful to get to have come here. And I've came here in 2011. I graduated my undergrad and my grad school here and still am part of the national team and get to train with amazing athletes.
This is not an uncommon story, right? We've talked to other athletes who have this experience mm-hmm. of coming to U of I because it's so accessible, and then they make a life here, right? I mean, have you found
yeah.
you know, that? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love the community here. Whether I was in undergrad, had amazing nutrition coursework, which is what my program was. My teammate is a really important community in my life. I've kind of nestled in here. I have my church community that I love. I met my husband here, who is a student at the U of I, and so now we're making our own home here in Champaign. It's kind of the story that they come and they never leave is pretty much what my coach says, and it's finding it true for me as well.
All right, so when did you start doing marathons in particular? Because that is a particular type of athletic
yeah.
endeavor that's fairly unique.
Yeah, so I came in 2011, and I did the 2011 Chicago Marathon was my first marathon.
Is it something you had always wanted to do at that distance, or did you have to be talked into it, or how did that
come about?
Good question,
too.
Yeah.
So actually, and this is something I didn't mention before, I did end up going to a small private college in Helena, Montana, right after high school, before I came to Illinois, just because of the really high out-of-state tuition costs at Illinois. And so because there was no organized team in Montana, I ended up not playing wheelchair basketball anymore, but I brought my racing chair with me because, like I said, I love training. And at that point, I wasn't using a speedometer. I was just training on my own. And one of my chemistry professors is a big runner, big marathon runner, and he showed me the program, Map My Run. And it turns out that I was doing 20-mile pushes by myself without even knowing it, just self-selected. I loved training. And so I think that the sport kind of chose me. When I entered Illinois, I had a really nice kind of endurance ability. And once I got here as well, I had finished a lot of my hard classes from Montana. And so I had a little bit more openings in my schedule to really kind of get into the training schedule of the team here. And so I think all of those together, training for a marathon, I was perfectly set up for that. And had a great time my first Chicago. I ended up qualifying for Boston that year. And because of my Boston time, my coach Adam was like, hey, I think there's one more marathon we need to have you do this season. And so this was 2012. And I went to Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, Minnesota. And it's actually at that race that I qualified for the 2012 Paralympic Games. And I will say that it was really a shock for me. It wasn't something I was planning for. I wasn't really trying for. I just loved training, and I loved doing marathons. And that kind of tells how I think I was just kind of meant to be in this sport and meant to come here and get to be able to get in an amazing environment where I can learn how to get faster and faster.
All right, we are going to take a break on the program. If you're just joining us, we are talking with Illinois athlete Susanna Scaroni. Recently won her second Boston Marathon in the women's wheelchair division. That's on top of four trips to the Paralympics in her career. She was also, as we've been hearing, a graduate of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Our program is on tape today. We spoke with Susanna last week, so we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by sending an email to talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to our conversation with athlete Susanna Scaroni. She recently won her second Boston Marathon in the women's wheelchair division. She's a four-time Paralympic athlete, including winning gold at the Tokyo Games in 2021. She's an alum of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. No calls for this part of the show because we taped this conversation last week, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Talk about what goes into training for a wheelchair marathon.
Yeah, so for a really good question, in wheelchair marathoning, as opposed to able-bodied running, some of the dynamics are different. And so one of the major parts of the wheelchair marathon is drafting. And drafting is kind of like if you've ever watched car or bike racing, if one person is in the front, the people behind that person are going at the same speed but not having to work quite as hard. Because the very front person is taking most of the wind. And so it's pretty common to kind of trade off amongst athletes. So that some like conserve some energy before they kind of pull the group again. It's advantageous to do that because times will become faster. And that's the way a lot of races go. But because of that,
do they call it a peloton like in cycling?
So not quite, because in a peloton, you have more of a wide breadth of athletes where kind of those people in the middle are more supported and protected. Wheelchair racing, it's just usually a single file. And it does also mean, though, that a lot of times there will be sprints. So people that are in the back conserving energy, they know where they may want to attack. And so you can get a lot more of those high-intensity intermittent sprints in a wheelchair marathon. So the training that we do, we do a lot of endurance training to like build up a solid ability to push for 2 hours. But we always do a lot of rolling accelerations. So a big focus on our training is trying to get to a really high top max speed and to be able to do that from like a steady effort, because a lot of marathons and track races will benefit from that skill. So we do longer pushes sometimes, but a lot of our days are going to be interval training, whether on a track or on hill repeats. So we have some of the hills we have in Champaign, all with the goal of being able to get to a really high max speed.
Forgive my, or I should say thank you for bearing with my ignorance of the sport here. I wonder if, you know, the hilliness of certain courses really affects how you approach training, right? Are there some that are, you know, you can count on coasting a little bit more than others maybe?
Yeah, great question. And yes, the answer is yes. For the two hilly courses that we have in our circuit, there's one in the spring, it's Boston, one in the fall, and that's New York City. And we have a few different loops that have some more longer hill climbs. And so my coach will have us really do those exact routes more often than we would for something like Chicago Marathon, Tokyo Marathon, or like the Berlin Marathon, where those are really flat and it's really good to be able to even work on track intervals for those races because of how many different attacks there are going to be usually on a flat course.
So I know technology is a part of every elite athlete's life, whether it's, clothing or shoes. I've got to imagine that's amplified even more when, you know, the technology is such an integral part of a sport as wheelchair racing. Can you talk about how you have approached that over the years and how that's evolved for you?
Absolutely. It's so huge in our sport. And all the way from, you know, the very first encounter. So in our sport, we don't use our day chairs. We use a racing chair. And it's really important that an athlete is in a good seating position, which means kind of just the angle that their knees are in their frame and where their shoulders are in like the front of their frame. That's also maximized when they get a hand ring diameter. That's good for their body too. But all of those things can change as you grow. They can change as you kind of get stronger and figure out what your, you know, optimal position might be. And so even as a kid, one of my big advantages that I had was just that I had a program nearby. And because of learning the sport existed, but also having a bunch of different program chairs that were hand-me-downs that we could use is really big. And a lot of families have a hard time, you know, being able to spend so much money to invest in a racing chair when the chances of it, you know, being perfect right away are really challenging, or someone growing that as a big challenge too. So from the very first beginning of trying the sport, equipment's huge. Our gloves are also something that the longer you do the sport, the more kind of customized you make those, not only for your hand size, but also kind of what your stroke style is and kind of maybe even some of the distances that you do. So all of those things have grown and evolved for me personally from the time I started and was in the most standard option available. And thankfully, I was still loving it because a lot of people don't love it when nothing really fits them that well. Until where I am now, where I have, you know, a really high-level equipment sponsor. So I have a really nice racing chair that fits me, that is lightweight. I know after lots of different trial and error kind of what a good hand ring diameter size for me is. I've gotten to play around with different gloves and now kind of know glove styles that are nice for me. We have 3D printed gloves, so they've gotten lighter and lighter and more reproducible since I started as a kid. And so all of those things have contributed so much to me personally, but also to the sport. We're seeing times are getting really fast. And I think a big part of that is advances in technology. And then also the fact that support and sponsorships are higher now too. And I think you see more athletes now that actually can see this as a full-time career. And that definitely plays into, you know, abilities to train and recover and things like that too.
Okay, a couple of things I want to pick up on there. One is 3D printed gloves. I got to ask you more about that. How does that work? What difference does that make over, say, you know, a pair of garden gloves I have in my garage here, for example?
Yeah. Oh, great question. So in this, I should start with saying that it might seem like if you're thinking about wheelchair racing, you might think about what it looks like when a person pushes a wheelchair, they like, you know, down the street or whatever, and usually grip their hand ring. In wheelchair racing, we actually don't grip the hand ring at all. We have gloves that keep our hands in a fist. And actually, because of that, like, we're able to use bigger muscle groups in our upper shoulders and our back. And so our gloves are meant to kind of keep our hands in a fist and be able to, like, punch and squeeze a hand ring such that we can, like, get on it really strongly. And then kind of dynamically move around the hand ring and come off of it really well too, because we've learned over the years that the way you actually like get on and off your hand ring can be really useful for getting faster speeds. So our gloves have changed in design to kind of help facilitate that. And so we can 3D print gloves using like different materials. So kind of like PLA is a type and TPU is a type of plastic that we can use in a 3D printer. And many years ago, we sent our handmade plastic gloves that we would melt plastic and kind of form it to our hands. We had those sent to be scanned. So scanning things is way more challenging than it is to print them once you have that kind of software like information. So because I was fortunate, I've been here so long, I was able to scan gloves a long time ago. And now at our actual training center here, my coach and his assistants, like they actually use the software to print gloves right at our training center. They can increase the size or increase the like durability of the gloves. And that has really made a big difference in our sport because, like I said, we used to melt plastic and try our best to kind of form it to our hands. But then to get it to where, like I was talking about, it hits the hand ring well and comes off the hand ring well, that was a lot of trial and error. And then you would have to melt the glove back down and kind of try to make a groove in it where it was going to hit the hand ring. And you could never get your gloves to be mirror images of each other, and you could never reproduce the same glove either. So kind of if it broke or something happened, you had to just start over from fresh. And because you hit your hand ring so many times in a race, it is one of the most important elements, in my opinion. And so now that we can 3D print them, we can make identical gloves. You can have multiple pairs of gloves. You can try different materials out, different densities, and you can change the shapes around a little bit too. So I think that's been really amazing evolution since I started, and that I really appreciate having today.
Yeah, well, and this gets at the other point that you mentioned, which is the increase in sponsorships. You said a lot more people can see this as a full-time career. I think we can all see this just in, like, the amount of television advertising that features para-athletes now that maybe didn't exist. Is that something you've seen evolve over your time as a professional, or I guess collegiate and then professional athlete?
Definitely. I have definitely seen a huge expansion. I think a big part of that was when the U.S. Olympic Committee actually rebranded to be the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. And I think that since then, there's been a much more of an embracing of para-athletes. And they, big brand sponsors that, you know, historically sponsor Olympians, have also recognized, like, oh, the Paralympics also exist, and they all want to have Paralympic team members as well. And so I think that has opened up so many amazing partnerships. And some of these cool brands have taken projects with sports, with parasports, and have really actually continued to work with those athletes even after the Paralympic Games were over. And sometimes those partnerships kind of die out a little bit, but like, for example, Bridgestone Tires, who was working with many of the wheelchair racers leading into Paris last summer on rubber designs for our gloves to, like, go on the outside of our gloves. You know, they've actually continued to work with some of the athletes on continuing to try and make that product better and better. And that's really cool. And I think that shows the level of awareness, and also that brands are enjoying working with parasports, and, like, especially when there's a lot of equipment involved and they have a lot of R&D resources and things like that.
So, okay, this is a little personal indulgence here. I'm about as far as you can get from an elite athlete in life. So I wonder, you know, some of us struggle to keep up with even simple goals, like getting a little exercise every day. What keeps you motivated day in, day out? What advice do you have for me?
Yeah, well, that's what I would say is, I would say goals are good. Like, I love goals. Goals, I think, are really important. So say maybe it's like exercise. Maybe that's a goal you have. I think that's awesome, and that's huge. But I would say, like, it goes down to the small things you can do every day, and, like, keeping them small, I think, is important. So, like, maybe it's like I need to get up at this time so I can go for a walk around the block. And kind of working things at a very small level, but trying to be consistent with them does so much. I think that breaking things down, consistency, allow you to slowly get better and better and better and become more routine, which is why I'm sure I probably enjoy it so much today. It is so much a part of my life and my routine, and it's challenging. I like to make sure it's challenging and has to be uncomfortable, but I know for sure that that's been built upon by the small steps that I've taken.
Atomic habits, as they say, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we're coming to the end of our time together. As we are taping this, it's mid-May. What's next for you?
Yeah, I will actually be traveling to Knotwell, Switzerland soon. I leave tomorrow, and I am going to be participating in a Grand Prix track meet there. So it'll be, we transitioned from the marathons into the track, and I am excited to race there. It's one of my favorite competitions of the year because it's a great international field, and I love Switzerland, so looking forward to going to that.
Sounds awesome. All right. Well, Illinois athlete Susanna Scaroni is a four-time Paralympian, two-time Boston Marathon winner, among many other titles. Susanna, best of luck in Switzerland and with your future competitions. Thanks for talking with us on the 21st show.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
And that is it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, our Friday Week in Review, we'll have our local news roundup. We'll also talk about what the General Assembly has been up to in its penultimate week of session, second to last week, I think. We'll hear what's been happening also in Washington from our correspondent there, Linda Kenyon. Plus, we'll talk with one of the artists featured in a new museum exhibit in Rockford, highlighting that city's art scene as it was in the 1990s. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Our summer intern is Lily Nazarova. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.